Hi everyone, it's great to be here. I've really enjoyed all the talks and discussions so far. So what I'd like to talk about today is to look at a fairly high level at theories which take a non-standard approach to time evolution, or indeed do away with time evolution altogether. So I'm going to begin by explaining why I think the scientific evidence is pointing us in this sort of direction. And I'm then going to argue that in certain circumstances, the time evolution assumption may be holding us back somewhat. Now, because a variety of our ways of thinking within both physics and philosophy is often predicated on a time evolution picture of reality, moving away from the time evolution picture offers us the opportunity to rethink some fairly foundational concepts. So there are many interesting conversations to be had there, but in this talk, I will focus particularly on determinism, and I will think about what determinism might look like in a post-time evolution physics. Finally, I will give an example by describing a possible application of these ideas about determinism to explaining some fine-tuned effects in quantum mechanics. So I want to start with the following fairly simple observation. Spatial non-locality, temporal locality, and special relativity are inconsistent with one another. So let me elaborate a little. First off, I should be clear that here and throughout the talk, I will be assuming that we are interested in providing a realist account of quantum phenomena. So that is an account which describes what happens during the measurement process and the role of observers, and which does so in an intersubjective way, meaning that all observers can agree on the content of reality. So textbook quantum mechanics is not realist in that sense, because different observers will not in general agree about the time and location of wave function collapses. I'm not going to dwell very much on why one might think realism is worth pursuing, because that ground has been well covered elsewhere. But I will observe that both special and general relativity place a lot of emphasis on intersubjectivity, because they're very concerned with how to translate between different observers. So relativity really is pursuing this kind of realist intersubjective approach. And thus textbook quantum mechanics and textbook relativity have very different worldviews and are trying to do entirely different things. So in my view, it's unlikely we will achieve a successful unification unless we first have a suitable realist intersubjective account of quantum mechanics. So because I'm working within this realist paradigm, when I talk about locality, I mean that not in the mathematical sense in which that term is sometimes used in quantum field theory, but in the technical sense we use that term in discussions of realist theories, particularly with relation to Bell's theorem. So I will say that some realist account of phenomena is spatially local if correlations between events at different spatial positions must always be mediated by physical signals, either moving directly between the locations or in the form of a common cause, which is in their past light cones. So I will then take Bell's theorem to be the statement that subject to certain assumptions, some of the correlations produced by quantum mechanics can't be accounted for by any such spatially local model. Now, by temporal locality, I mean really just the temporal analog of spatial locality. So I will say a realist model is temporally local if correlations between events at different times must always be mediated by a physical state evolving between those times. Now, we don't articulate the assumption of temporal locality very much, but it is pretty common in physics, and in particular is inherent in the common heuristic picture of the universe as something like a computer which takes in an initial state and evolves it forward in time. Finally, by special relativity, I mean here specifically the relativity of simultaneity, and I'm going to mean that in a fairly strong sense, so I'm going to ask that there should be no preferred reference frames at any level of reality, even if they're unobservable. So it's now fairly straightforward to see the problem here, because if we have an instance of spatial non-locality, we can always transform that into an instance of temporal non-locality via a change in reference frames. So it looks as if we can't necessarily have all of these three things at once. So that means that for realists, our options are actually fairly constrained, and we have three possible routes to consider. The first is to accept that special relativity doesn't hold at all levels of reality. So that's what they do in relativistic Bohmian theories. There, the wave function is supposed to collapse on some preferred reference frame, but contradiction with relativity is avoided because that reference frame is supposed to be unobservable. Now, I'm not hugely enthusiastic about this route, because even if there's no outright contradiction with relativity, I find this invisible preferred reference frame epistemically problematic, and also sort of contrary to the spirit of relativity, if not the letter. And thus, it seems unlikely to me that this is a promising route toward unification. So the second option is to deny the existence of spatial locality. And that involves denying one of the assumptions that goes into Bell's theorem. So for example, there's been some interesting recent work on superdeterminism, which involves denying the assumption of statistical independence, or retrocausality, which of course involves denying no retrocausality. And I think both of these routes are very interesting and deserve much more attention than they have so far received. But for today, I will focus on the third option, which is to accept the existence of temporal non-locality. So the interesting thing about this route is that it opens up a variety of possibilities for the ways the laws of nature could be. So if we allow that the laws of nature could work in a temporally non-local way, then they could be non-Markovian, or they could be retrocausal. Or we could say that if we don't always need states to mediate temporal correlations, perhaps actually we never need states to mediate temporal correlations. And that would push us towards a type of view where we have no states at all, and instead we have something like a manifold of point-like events, which is governed externally by laws which apply all at once to the whole of history, in much the same way as the rules of a game of Sudoku apply to the whole grid at once, rather than starting at the left and evolving towards the right. Now, the attractive thing about this third option is that it seems very hospitable to unification with GR. So for example, we discussed in several talks yesterday the fact that the fundamental object of relativistic theories tends to be the point-like event. So moving to a point-like event ontology for quantum mechanics seems like a very promising way to bring those theories closer together. Furthermore, the Einstein equations are, I think, most naturally interpreted as precisely this sort of atemporal all-at-once law, because, at least in their standard formulation, their solution is a space-time, an entire course of history, rather than a state at a time. So I think this route does have a lot going for it. However, when I talk to physicists, many physicists are very wary about the idea of moving away from the time evolution picture. So one concern that's sometimes raised is the idea that losing temporal locality would make physics totally impossible because everything would just depend arbitrarily on everything else. And this is actually very similar to a concern that was raised by Einstein back when spatial non-locality was first entering the discussion. And as it transpires, Einstein was not right about that. It is in fact possible to do physics in the context of spatial non-locality, provided that the non-locality is sufficiently ordered and regular. And I see no reason to think that temporal non-locality should not be similar in that regard. Another argument I have seen is the idea that the time evolution assumption has served us well so far. It's produced a variety of highly successful and extremely accurate theories, and therefore it must be right. So again, I don't think this is a great argument, because within this kind of block universe all at once picture, time evolution laws can simply be reconceptualized as rules of inference from some distribution of past events to some distribution of future events. And provided that the block universe is sufficiently well ordered, there's no particular reason why those sorts of laws should not work very well in that context, even though, strictly speaking, time evolution is not a real physical process in that particular picture. So I think this option of pursuing atemporal all-at-once theories is very promising. We also have a variety of mathematical tools already available to us, which can potentially be used to do that. So for instance, Lagrangian formulations look very much like this sort of atemporal all-at-once theory, in that they involve optimizing some quantity over an entire history rather than at a time, and thus, taking Lagrangian theories more seriously as a description of ontology seems like a promising route to pursue. I also want to reinforce that this question about the reality of time evolution is not sort of idle philosophical navel gazing, because this time evolution assumption is occurring in a variety of places throughout physics. And in my view, it is causing some problems and confusions that maybe don't need to be problems. So witness the long-standing discussion in quantum foundations over the ontology of the wave function, over whether the wave function is real or not. So for example, the well-known PBR theorem purports to be a proof that the wave function must be an element of reality. But what the PBR theorem actually proves is that if we assume that correlations between events at different times must be mediated by an evolving state, then that evolving state must contain all the same information as the quantum state. But the PBR theorem, of course, does not prove that there must be states or that temporal correlations must be mediated by states. And thus, this whole discussion looks very different if we no longer make that assumption. So in my view, moving away from this time evolution picture offers a really promising way to resolve some of the disagreements between psiontologists and psi epistemicists, and to find a third way which allows the merits of both sides to be acknowledged, but also allows them to no longer be in contradiction. Similarly, there are a variety of interpretations of quantum mechanics. Which have great difficulties when we try to make them relativistic. And the reason for that is really quite clear once we look a bit closer, because several of these interpretations, like de Broglie-Bohm and the GRW collapse model, are time evolution models. And that means that they are trying to maintain temporal locality whilst also allowing spatial non-locality. And thus, inevitably, the only way to achieve that is to add in a preferred reference frame, which is what they have to do. It was observed some years ago by Bell that actually the way to make GRW collapse relativistic is to simply get rid of all the states, leaving us with a manifold of point-like collapse events, which are then automatically consistent with relativity. That model was subsequently formalized by Timolka, and Gizan subsequently observed that this Timolka's model is relativistically covariant only if we renounce any account of the temporal coming into being of the flashes and think about them as being generated all at once as a single distribution. So what we see here is that we're really being pushed towards having to abandon time evolution in order to make that model work. So I think it's reasonably clear that moving away from time evolution offers some potentially very interesting and useful solutions to these long-standing interpretational problems within quantum mechanics. Finally, for a less foundations-oriented example, consider this strong CP problem. So this problem involves a parameter known as the vacuum angle, and experimentally speaking, this parameter appears to be more or less exactly zero, a fact which is very difficult to explain within the standard time evolution formulation of QCD. However, as Healy and others have pointed out, there exists a competing global all-at-once formulation in terms of loops or holonomies, and because this formulation does away with certain sorts of gauge transformations, the vacuum parameter doesn't exist in that formulation, and thus the problem of why it is equal to zero can't even be formulated. I should reinforce that moving to that formulation does bring some new problems of its own, so it's not my claim that the solution totally comes for free. But nonetheless, I think this fact is an interesting indication that moving away from the time evolution picture may offer some novel and I think pleasingly simple solutions to long-standing problems in physics. So, as I said, moving away from the time evolution picture offers us the opportunity to rethink a variety of concepts that play an important role in our thinking about physics and philosophy. And so today I'll be focusing on determinism, but in order to do that, I'm going to need a very general way of talking about laws of nature, which doesn't presuppose any ideas about time evolution, or which doesn't presuppose that laws have to be written as differential equations or as time evolution operators or any of the sort of standard ways we might think of laws operating. So on this slide, I present a description of a sort of general framework for talking about lawhood, which I have found useful in this regard. So I'm going to use the term Humean mosaic to refer to all the local matters of particular fact within a world. So that includes things like objects, events, and fields, but it will not include less tangible things like causal, modal, and nomic relations. I will then use the term constraint to refer to a set of Humean mosaics, and I will then express laws as probability distributions over constraints. So for example, if we think it is a law that no signal can travel faster than light, then assuming we have some sufficiently operational definition of what we mean by signaling and what we mean by the speed of light, we can then form the set of all Humean mosaics in which no signal travels faster than light. And we can then write this law as a probability distribution which assigns probability 1 to that constraint and 0 to everything else. So the nice thing about this formulation is that it offers us a different way of thinking about the way in which laws act on reality. So rather than thinking of laws as acting on a state and evolving it forwards, in this picture we can think about laws as singling out, as selecting sets of human mosaics which are compatible with the laws, and it's then required that the actual mosaic belongs to the set corresponding to the law. So this is a way of conceptualizing the idea that laws act on the universe all at once rather than in the terms of time evolution. So we now come to determinism. So there are a variety of technical definitions of determinism floating around in the literature, but they are all more or less versions of what we might call Laplacian determinism. And Laplacian determinism is the idea that a theory or the world is deterministic if a state at a given time or on a given time slice, together with the laws of nature, is sufficient to determine everything which happens to the future. Now, this definition makes a lot of sense if you're working within the forward time evolution picture, but it has some quite strange consequences if you try to apply it to any other sort of picture. So, for example, consider a retrocausal theory in which we have both a forwards evolving state and a backwards evolving state, such that the initial state together with the final state, together with the laws of nature, are together sufficient to determine everything that happens in between that initial state and final state. So this theory is certainly not deterministic according to standard Laplacian determinism. But nonetheless, I think it's reasonable to say there's a more general sense in which this theory is deterministic. After all, everything is determined by some temporally evolving state. And moreover, there are no objective chances floating around. And really, if we're no longer working in the forwards time evolution picture, there seems no particular reason for our definition of determinism to treat the initial state as being special. So what we'd really like is a definition of determinism which allows that this sort of theory and other sorts of non-standard theories, including ones which have no time evolution at all, can still be deterministic. So using the framework from the previous slide, I suggest saying that we have global determinism if every one of the laws of nature is associated to a probability distribution which is trivial, which is to say the distribution simply picks out a single constraint. The reason this deserves to be regarded as a form of determinism is that it means we have no probabilities or objective chances from the external global point of view. In that case, each law simply corresponds to a constraint, and then we have an intersection of the constraints from which the true mosaic must be drawn, since it must lie inside every one of those constraints. Now, the point I'd like to reinforce is that it's perfectly possible to have global determinism in this sense without ever having Laplacian determinism. So looking back at our Sudoku grid, the Sudoku grid is globally deterministic in the sense that provided it was set up correctly, it has a unique solution. There are no probabilities involved in selecting the solution of the Sudoku grid. But nonetheless, if you start at the left of the Sudoku grid and try to evolve towards the right and try to predict each column as you go, clearly your predictions will not look deterministic. You won't have, because you can't see the whole thing at once, you won't be able to make deterministic predictions. So what this means is that this idea of global determinism offers us kind of a third way out of this traditional dilemma over determinism. So it's kind of typically suggested that we have to choose between either Laplacian determinism or intrinsically probabilistic laws of nature and objective chances and all that kind of thing. But global determinism offers us a third route where we can have indeterminism at the local level. When we're looking at our local situation and what looks like forwards time evolution. But nonetheless, we have determinism from the global level, and none of the laws of nature need to be intrinsically probabilistic because the laws that we observe locally are not the same as the global laws that apply to the whole universe at once. So this offers potentially a nice route for those who recognize that obviously quantum mechanics looks indeterministic, but nonetheless have a problem with objective chances or would prefer for things to be deterministic at some level.
Emily, 10 minutes plus questions.
Right. So we can also make a couple more precise distinctions here. So I'll say that we have strong global determinism in the case where the intersection of the constraints associated with the laws contains exactly one mosaic. In that case, the laws of nature pick out the course of history uniquely, meaning that we don't even need any initial conditions, that the laws of nature really do define absolutely everything. We can also have weak global determinism, where the intersection of the constraints contains more than one mosaic. So in that case, we have some arbitrariness associated with selecting one mosaic out of the set of mosaics in the intersection. But note that by construction, the laws of nature don't assign any probability distribution over that intersection, not even the uniform distribution. So the selection of that one mosaic is arbitrary, but it doesn't need to be regarded as a chancy event. And so even in that case, although we don't have everything being perfectly determined, we still don't have any probabilistic laws or probabilistic chancy events from that external point of view. Indeed, the arbitrariness involved there is roughly analogous to what we have in Laplacian determinism surrounding the selection of the initial conditions. Again, we typically think of initial conditions as being arbitrary but not chancy. So there's a analogy here. The only difference in the weak global determinism case is that we don't necessarily require that the arbitrariness occurs at the start of time. Now, weak global determinism does allow for a phenomenon which one might feel is not very consistent with our intuitions about determinism, because it would allow us to have, for example, holes or local patches popping into existence where the contents of where the events in that hole are arbitrary but not chancy, and thus these events can be undetermined and yet consistent with weak global determinism. If one wants to rule that out, we can also define hole-free weak global determinism. And what this would mean is that we would require that within the intersection of the intersection of the constraints, that there is never any pair of mosaics which differs only on some local region. So by making that requirement, we ensure that any arbitrariness involved in selecting the mosaic is not localized anywhere. It has to be spread out over the course of history. So, for example, a theory which obeys Laplacian determinism but also time reversal invariance would satisfy hole-free weak global determinism, because although there's arbitrariness associated with choosing the initial state, we could equally well choose some other state and evolve forwards and backwards from it. So the arbitrariness in that picture is not localized at any point in space-time, so that's why it's hole-free. Finally, I promised an application. So it's been observed in various places that the fact that quantum mechanics is non-local but also non-signaling is a bit weird, maybe a bit conspiratorial, and Wood and Spickens have a really lovely result showing that any causal model for such phenomena necessarily has to be fine-tuned. So physicists don't tend to like fine-tuning very much, and so there's a clear mandate here to explain why quantum mechanics is fine-tuned in this particular way. So the suggestion I want to make here is that global determinism, and in particular, in the language of the previous slide, hole-free global determinism can explain that, because hole-free global determinism necessarily entails that we have no closed causal loops. Since the values of the variables inside a closed causal loop are not determined by anything outside the loop, and thus they are undetermined, and that's an undetermined local patch or hole, which is meant to be ruled out by determinism. Furthermore, if we could use quantum mechanics to send superluminal signals, then clearly we could use that capability to produce a closed causal loop. As shown in this diagram here, we would simply compose two superluminal signals where we would have Alice send a superluminal message to Bob, who would receive it and then send exactly the same message back to Alice via another superluminal signal, and she would receive that message just in time to use it as the content of her original message. So whatever that message says has just popped out of nowhere, it's not determined by anything, and it's not consistent with global determinism. So in the paper, I make this a bit more formal using the language of entropy and mutual information, but the basic idea is that imposing global determinism as a constraint, imposing hole-free global determinism as a constraint on our model necessarily entails that we don't have signaling, and thus all local parameters must necessarily be fine-tuned to prevent signaling from being possible. And I also have a couple of papers making similar arguments concerning information causality and contextuality. So finally, where does this research program lead? So as I said, there are a variety of interesting foundational concepts which would look quite different in the context of a non-time evolution physics. So I would be very interested in exploring things like how causation works, how scientific explanation works, what counterfactuals and probability would look like, and how we would understand those concepts if we are no longer assuming that time evolution is fundamental and that that's how all processes should be founded. Perhaps more relevantly to the topic of this specific conference, I think this prohibition of closed causal loops type argument also potentially has something to do with the arrow of time, because clearly if it were possible to send signals both forwards and backwards in time, that could be used to form a closed causal loop, which would be incompatible with determinism. So there's an argument to be made here that imposing global determinism on the universe also necessarily imposes some space-time structure where we must be constrained in our ability to signal so that we can't signal in both directions at once. So I'm interested to see if that idea, perhaps combined with, say, Melamot's theorem, could be used to argue that determinism in some sense imposes a space-time structure on reality. Speaking of time, I guess I'm getting fairly close to the end of mine, so I guess I will now stop and allow people to ask questions.
All right. Thank you so much, Emily, for your great talk. I can see already quite a few questions in the audience. So we start with Lee, please.
Yes, Emily, I don't know if you're aware of work by some cosmologists like Halaper and Padillo, where they study a generalization of general relativity where the action is a ratio of integrals over space-time. And they end up predicting formulas like the cosmological constant, which becomes a variable to be becomes equal to the average over space-time of the energy momentum tensor divided by the average over space-time of the space-time volume. And so those are clearly the kind of non-equation of motion relations that you can explain by looking at a theory of the kind you're advocating.
Yes, that is that's a great example. Yeah, that's a very interesting way of thinking about the cosmological constant. Yeah. Yeah, as I say, I think there are many features of physics which potentially can be explained in this kind of global context, which are more difficult to explain if we're looking at things in the time evolution picture.
All right. Next question is Carlos.
Hi, Emily. Thank you. This was nice. Since this is a conference in which, you know, different communities with different knowledges come together, I just want to point out and sort of, it's also an invitation, that the entire way in which dynamics, in the formal sense dynamic, is studied in general relativity and in quantum gravity. I mean, later on today, I will talk about something a little bit about that in my talk. It's not in terms of evolution in time. It's exactly in terms of constraints in a way which fits pretty well in what you're doing. So a large part of what you're doing, more than a proposal, is also description of the way things are actually done by a community of physicists. In fact, both in the classical and the quantum case, there might be some slight difference, especially in the relation between the global picture and the local picture. What happened, somehow your human mosaic picture is very global. Perhaps the same can be done more locally. But what I want to say is that the way I do mechanics, just the formulation of mechanics in my book, in my quantum gravity book, it's exactly in terms of constraints on the possibility for very specific reasons, because general relativity makes it very awkward to think in terms of time evolution, so to say.
Yes, and I find when I give this talk, my audience tends to be very split, and sort of half of them find the idea of losing time evolution sort of abhorrent and terrible, and the other half sort of thought that was what we were already doing. So I feel like
that's right.
Communicated better to the other half of physicists. Part of my project here, I think that this all at once approach is being used to some degree in many parts of physics and hasn't really propagated very well through to philosophy of physics and to our ideas about things like laws and determinism. And so a lot of what I'm interested in here is kind of understanding how we should change those concepts in light of these developments in physics and the fact that this alternative point of view is becoming more prominent.
Thanks. Very nice.
All right, Vilasini, it's your turn.
Okay, thanks very much for the really interesting talk, Emily. So I had a lot of questions, but maybe I'll stick to a few short ones in the interest of time. The first one is regarding your claim that this sort of global constraint of determinism kind of restricts you to having no causal loops. And I don't know how far what I'm going to say will fit with your framework, but there's the whole causal modeling approach, and just, you know, if you look at this sort of Julia Pearl's framework and such, and just restricted to classical systems, you can consider these cyclic causal models. And in fact, you can, because everything is classical and it's a sort of causal model, then there is this underlying assumption of determinism going on there, that for every node given all their ancestors, you can determine the exact value. But you can also do this when the model is cyclic. So in that sense, I am trying to make sense of this claim in relation to such causal models, where even when you have causal loops, you can have a deterministic explanation of things.
Yeah. So a causal loop will still look deterministic from a sort of local point of view, because you will see that this node causes this node and this node causes that node. So if you only from that local point of view, it will look deterministic. But if you're looking at the whole model and you're saying, you're trying to say what the laws of nature say about what the values of the variables will be inside that loop, the laws necessarily won't say with definiteness what that will be. It's a little like the sort of the old science fiction story where a mysterious stranger comes along and gives you the designs for a time machine, and then you build it, and then you go back in time and up the design. So sort of locally all of that looks deterministic, but from a global point of view, that design has just popped out of nowhere. It has no external cause. So that's what I mean by saying that close deterministic.
Right. I guess typically in these models you kind of add certain exogenous nodes that kind of inject this information into the loop, and then given that information, it's sort of all sort of determine what goes in the loop. But yeah, then depends on what you have in your model. Yeah. And maybe another very quick question. I'm completely empathize with the idea of maybe going towards a more, you know, a formulation where you don't necessarily always have to think of a direction of time and evolution of time. But at some point, we also need to make a connection with our experience that we do experience this arrow of time. And maybe that's related to your second open question you've written there. And so maybe I would like to know your thoughts on that. And a related thing here is that there are frameworks where you try to assign quantum states over not just space, but also over time. And I think there's some results there that relate sort of having entanglement in time with being able to see some unitary dynamics or, you know, the standard quantum evolution in time. And is there any relationship between that and what Jesus said?
Yeah, I think it is a natural consequence of this idea of temporal locality to see temporal entanglement. And there are some approaches where, I forget who this paper is by, but there's a very nice paper about regarding a particle over time as being a series of entangled moments entangled with each other. The idea is that those that sort of a process of a particle in time and two entangled particles is not really so different. I mean, indeed, that's what I guess the Choi Jamiokoski isomorphism is telling us.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, great, thanks a lot.
Okay, seems like we have time for one more question. Lucien already had a question.
There's some motivation. I mean, well, as this is kind of echoes some of the comments that Carla made, there's motivation coming from quantum gravity. And in the quantum foundations community, as you're probably aware, there's all this work being done recently on indefinite causal structure and indefinite causal order. So motivated by the problems in quantum gravity. So, you know, my own work on the causality framework, which attempts to give you a way of doing physics where you don't have where it's not a time evolution point of view. And then there's work in the Pavia group and the Vienna group looking at indefinite causal order and a sort of process matrix framework. So this sort of fits in some sense with your broad objectives, although in that case, the model seems to be still probabilistic, not deterministic at the global level. And I wonder, is determinism essential for the sort of program you're imagining, or is it something you could also imagine relaxing?
And obviously the all at once idea doesn't depend on determinism. So the question I was just trying to answer is, what would it even mean for such a model to be deterministic? What would that look like? But you know, in order to say that some such models might be deterministic, others might not. I would also note that I wouldn't necessarily expect us to be able to write down a deterministic model, even if global determinism does hold, because laws of this kind apply sort of non-locally across the whole of history, which means we don't necessarily have access to all of their arguments and we can't necessarily see the whole picture. So I would kind of expect that our local attempts would not necessarily look deterministic, even if at some level we do have global determinism.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
Okay, I don't see any more questions. If there are no other questions, we are almost all out of time as well, I guess. And we have a 20 minutes break. Any more questions?
So maybe just one more comment then, since I was, I've often thought that LaTeX is an interesting example, that if you run a LaTeX file, it evolves forward in time, but it inserts lots of question marks the first time around, and then those question marks get removed if you run the file sufficiently many times. I wonder if that's an example of the sort you're looking at, or whether that's not the case.
I think the code in general would certainly be a nice example of the way in the kind of way one would imagine this operating, because when you compile your code of whatever, in whatever language you're writing it, it doesn't necessarily do that in an ordered sense. It will pick up stuff you've done later and noted earlier and so on. So I think as a sort of heuristic example, that's quite nice.
Okay, thanks.